They look like the homes of hobbits or other mythical creatures, but they were built to be affordable housing for humans. They're small, funky little houses in Iowa City, designed and built by Howard Moffett. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, Dr. Richard DeGowan grew up in two different Moffett houses. He's written about his experiences and how these funny little houses came to be in his new memoir, The House of Moffett. I will talk with him. And it is our spring membership drive here at Iowa Public Radio. It's time now for you to make your investment in the future of Iowa Public Radio. Go online, iowapublicradio.org. Thank you. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The Moffett Cottage Historic District in Iowa City includes five stone cottages that were designed and built by Howard Moffett in the 1930s and 40s. But those five little cottages are part of a much bigger picture. Howard Moffett built somewhere between 100 and 200 houses in Iowa City and Coralville. Dr. Richard DeGowan is a retired physician and professor emeritus at the University of Iowa. He lived in two different Moffett houses when he was growing up, and he's written about his experiences in the new book, House of Moffett, The First 20 Years, a memoir published by Ice Cube Press. He is with me today. Dr. DeGowan, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, your father moved, and your mother came a little bit later, but your family moved to Iowa in 1932. So this was right in the early days of the Great Depression. Your father had been downsized, I guess, in a way by the University of Michigan, a terrible mistake given what he went on to accomplish. But what brought them to Iowa City?
A job.
Which was quite the thing in 1932.
Yes. The three persons at the University of Michigan that had previously worked there with us, three-year contract, were summarily dismissed. And he came here in July 1st, 1932, where he joined the faculty to take a 5% cut in salary that day and wasn't sure he'd stay until 48 years later he decided that it was a good place to be.
So you came along in 1934, and your family was living in a little house on Muscatine Avenue at first, and then you moved into one of these Moffett houses. And tell me about the house that you moved into.
1218 Yule Street was on the edge of a cornfield, Mr. Reagan's cornfield. It stretched from our backyard down to Lower Muscatine and where the Sycamore Mall is now. And it was a white clapboard house that we were very fortunate to have for a three-bedroom furnished house for $32.50 a month. Wonderful, affordable housing, if you will.
And now, of course, at the time, I'm sure you didn't think about it at all because you were a very little boy, and it's easy to take those things for granted. But let's talk about the man who built that house, and he was your landlord. Howard Moffett was your landlord. And as a landlord, he had quite a reputation, right?
Well, Charity, he was, yes, he did. And he was an entrepreneur, I think, of the first order. After graduating from high school, he trained to be a Air Force pilot. World War I ended before he deployed. Went to law school for a while. I think got a degree in political science, actually, and traveled greatly and came back to establish the Triangle Automotive Parts Company with Ray Blakeslee in the 1920s, building their first house in 1924 with no previous experience in house construction.
Well, and that's a very important point, no previous experience in house construction. These houses, and he built a lot of them, are very unusual because every single one of them is different. And what was his approach to deciding what the house would be like?
I think he was influenced, according to Jan Nash, who wrote an article in the Palimpsest of the winter of 1992, by the small house period. I think it was promoted by Herbert Hoover at the time when he was president. And he relied on house plans that he might see in magazines, but also on Eleanor Hedgebeck, who had a degree in art history and helped him plan some of the floor plans and interiors of the houses that he built. They were small houses, period small houses, according to Jan Nash. And they really served a group of people who had very low income, if you will, struggling graduates, recent graduates of the university, and other people, of course, during the Depression. It was a very enlightened, to me, approach to solving, seeing a need and solving a problem that, if you think about it, and I have recently thought about it a good deal, really hasn't been solved recently, where there's a need for affordable housing in Iowa City. Why is that? One might ask if they read this book, as I have thought about it since I wrote it. There was an article in the Gazette a year or two ago about why contractors aren't building affordable housing, governmental regulations, and, of course, the lack of profit in it. Whereas Moffitt was able to provide housing for our family, for instance, at not 30% of a yearly income, which is considered affordable housing, but 16% in the case of my father.
Well, and let's get back to the designs for these houses, because this was really unusual. When we think about contractors building a lot of houses or creating a subdivision, there are usually, you know, a few different floor plans and a few different architectural designs. But the Moffitt houses are all unique because he didn't employ an architecture. And I get the impression that he kind of made this up as he went along. In fact, you have a story in your book about his wife looking through an issue of Better Homes and Gardens and saying, oh, you should build one like this, and him tearing out the page and taking it to his builder and saying, yeah, we should build a house that looks like this.
Yes. Well, that was the story that I was told as a kid as to how these were created. I think it was more involved than that, in fact, but the small houses were depicted in that way, and he followed through with them beautifully, I think.
Well, and he also was someone, and of course, I think this was a cost-saving measure, but he used a lot of recycled building materials. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, Bill Nowich, a friend of mine, architect in Iowa City, 40 years designing houses here, was asked to help remodel a number of these Moffitt houses, and he was able to examine what went into them and found that it was very good quality material, although it had been used before for different things, railroad ties for lintels over windows, and salvaged limestone from quarries, and a number of things like the rails from the Rundle Street trolley were used for I-beams to support the joists of the house. But I think the evidence for this is these houses, these homes have existed for 90 years. And I have never heard, perhaps there have been, that any have been torn down because they're structurally unsound. I've never heard of that in town.
Although you do hear stories about interesting design of the houses, and also that a lot of the floors are uneven. That's something that I've heard from a lot of people. But where, you know, you'll have a room and the corner didn't quite work out, so it's kind of at a funny angle, which actually, if you look at a lot of farmhouses from the turn of the century, you'll see the same kind of thing where people were just kind of making it up as they go along. But I do find it interesting that none of the houses are the same. I mean, there are some that are similar to each other. I mentioned the cottages in the historic district earlier, and those are five cottages that kind of have a similar design. But tell me about the first house you lived in, because it was nothing like those cottages, really.
Correct. I have to say, though, that I learned about Moffett houses from a resident of those cottages, Phil Miller, who wrote this article in the Palimpsest of winter of 1992, who, when his friend Fred Esker, the artist in Cedar Rapids, sent him a copy of the book, wrote me a lovely letter describing how much research he had done about Moffett houses to write this article. Anyway, the house that we lived in was very well, I think, designed in the sense that the living room opened into a dining room area that was with the kitchen off of it. And there were three bedrooms upstairs. There was only one bathroom upstairs, but there were only three of us and my family, which apparently worked out okay. And it really provided a wonderful home for us, for me, for 12 years or so.
Now, there was even a story on the subject of recycled materials, because you moved from one Moffett house to another Moffett house as you were growing up. And someone told you that Mr. Moffett had used the boards from your mother's flower box in the next house that you lived in.
The bottom of the flower box that was off the dining room window rotted out. And Jess Baker, the foreman, replaced it. But he reused the sides that were sound in the house that we later moved to about a block away when my folks bought the house after World War II.
And did you ever find any evidence of that?
Never looked, but
did,
never could find
look.
It.
Well, and there have been some, you mentioned talking to someone who had worked on a lot of these Moffett houses. I mean, there have been some pretty interesting things found when it's time to open up the walls and work on the wiring. What are some of the stories that you've heard?
Well, Paul Moore has told me that when he replaced wall sockets, he's got to be careful, put newspapers down because sawdust flows out of the wall because Moffett used this as an insulating material. Well, he found that it was very good insulating material in ice houses. It was standard to use that. And it was available as a side product of what he was doing. There was certainly that. And then the story that Bill Nowich told me about a contractor that called him and said, "Bill, you've got to come over and see this Moffett house we're redoing." And they'd had the plaster off the walls. And instead of lath, they'd used the oak hardwood tops of toilet seats to retain the plaster. And he couldn't believe that, but until he saw it.
Right, right. I can imagine that nobody would be able to believe that unless they saw it with their own two eyes. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Dr. Richard DeGowan. He has written a memoir that is about his first 20 years growing up in Iowa City, but it's also about the homes that he lived in and these homes that were built by Howard Moffett. The memoir is called House of Moffett, The First 20 Years, a Memoir. And Howard Moffett built over 100 houses in Iowa City and Coralville. No two of those houses are alike. And I know, given how many there are, a lot of people have lived in these houses over the years. If you have a story about living in one of these houses, please feel free to join our conversation. Give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with Dr. Richard DeGowan, and he has written a memoir about the first 20 years that he spent growing up in Iowa City. It's called House of Moffett, The First 20 Years, a Memoir. And it's about his life during that time. It's also about these remarkable little houses that you find all over Iowa City and Coralville. They're called Moffett Houses, and they were built by a man named Howard Moffett in the 1920s, 30s, and early 40s. He built between 100 and 200 of these houses. No two are alike. He built them without architectural plans, with a lot of creativity and a lot of recycled building products. You can be a part of this conversation as well. I know a lot of people have actually lived in these houses over the years. So if you've lived in a Moffett house and you have stories to share, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Dr. DeGowan, since you started writing about these houses, have you been surprised by how many people want to share stories with you?
Yes, indeed. I think that the the one time that really impressed me was a book signing for Wild Rose Books at University Hospital when I expected to see a couple of friends, and we ran out of books. And there were two persons particularly that came up to me. One was the current owner of the last house that I'd lived in, who had hosted us on a tour on May 15th of 2011 on a house tour for Moffett Houses. That was one of the things that encouraged me to write about this. And the niece of Howard Moffett, who lives in southwestern Iowa, had come to purchase some books. And at any rate, yes, very surprised at the interest and gratified to see that people were interested in Iowa City and change that has occurred. I wrote about my mother, 39 years old, taking her son, me, 5 years old, on a train trip to see the World's Fair and her family before World War II in 1939. And I thought about how, at that time, the problem of getting people to Chicago and elsewhere was solved, that has had a lot of obstacles recently. That is 4 hours, 3 hours, 40 minutes travel time from downtown Iowa City to downtown Chicago, passenger rail service with a Rock Island rocket hitting speeds of 120 miles an hour on northern Illinois, the Crandic track taking passengers from Iowa City downtown to downtown Cedar Rapids with I-380 now clogged with traffic. The Rock Island did not stop service if there was a computer glitch at O'Hare Airport. It did not stop if there was fog or a rainstorm. It was excellent service at that time. Why don't we have that now?
Well, that's a question that a lot of people have asked, and I'm sure a lot of people listening think, oh, I wish I could buy that ticket. You know, I'm curious. You talk about 1939, which was a very, very big year for your family. And of course, many people who are familiar with the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics, they think, oh, DeGowan, I know that name. And not just because of your work, but also because of the work of your father, Dr. Elmer DeGowan. In 1939, with the start of World War II, he was involved in really making it possible to collect blood and ship blood and store blood so that it could be used for transfusions. You write 4 or 5 pages about his work with the blood bank. And it made me curious, and I'd like to talk more about that time, but it made me curious about all of the remarkable things that your family accomplished and all of these remarkable things that happened during your lifetime. What made you want to write about these houses?
Well, I thought they were unique. Another thing, most of my colleagues at university didn't grow up in Iowa City. They've come from elsewhere, and I didn't think they knew very much about Iowa City or perhaps didn't care very much about the early times. And I mainly wrote this for my son, Bill, who grew up in Iowa City at a different time, from 1970 to 1990. And that was the origin of the original idea, was this narrative that I was writing about my father's family, which he knew only sketchy parts of his genealogy. And it wasn't until I retired and was contacted by people that were researching it that I found out about some of our origins. And so I was writing this up for Bill. And part of it was our early time living in Moffett houses, which were a good time. And even though it was during the Great Depression, World War II, the Cold War, the Korean War,
you write a lot about the neighborhood and spending times with friends in the neighborhood, the kind of freedom that you had as a young boy in the 1930s and 40s to really go where you wanted to do or where you wanted to go. And you you and your friends were really limited only by the chores that you had to do at the end of the day, right?
Well, and discipline about,
right,
you know, being in when the streetlights went on and a few other things that were pretty important. It's interesting. I've made contact with a friend that was a year older than I was, and a photograph in the book shows his sixth birthday party. Well, he recently contacted me last week and has been back for a tour after our lives parted for many years, 70 years.
You also write about some of your neighbors in that first neighborhood that you remember living in. And clearly it was a time of growth in Iowa City. It was a time when the university was attracting a lot of people. And although the town was still very small, most of your neighbors did have university connections. And all of those little houses that were rented out for $32.50 a month, that was kind of a who's who list of who would be incredibly influential in Iowa City later on.
Well, or elsewhere.
Right.
They were people that really, I had no idea what they were going to do as a kid, when I was a kid, and they really achieved quite a lot. Kenneth Brinkhouse, for instance, became a world authority on the research and understanding of hemophilia and how to treat it properly. Meeting him at the time I was a kid, I had no idea that anybody would do something like that. Across the street, an artist lived who reflected, I should say, some of the jealousy that they had for one of their colleagues, Grant Wood, who joined them in 1935 till he died in 42. And so it was an interesting viewpoint that I heard about, and I'm so glad that Grant Wood has gotten the recognition as a wonderful painter that he has in recent years.
Paul Engel lived in the neighborhood as well, who went on to direct the Iowa Writers' Workshop. And, you know, you also write about Howard Moffat as landlord, because as you mentioned, he was an entrepreneur. He built these houses to rent them out. And so then also he was responsible for the people who lived in the houses. And you have this wonderful story. You write that he was known as being a very responsive landlord. And you have this wonderful story. Was it on Easter he was all dressed up in his suit and ready to go to church, and he was walking down the street with a toilet seat over his shoulder, ready to go replace it for somebody who needed it?
Apparently it was an emergency that he rose to the occasion for.
And he was known for being very responsive throughout the years?
Yes, he was. And that was our experience. And he I think, was put out of business by government regulations that wouldn't permit him to raise his rents to $55 a month, and went to Texas and pursued an entrepreneurial lifestyle there. He came back to Iowa City to see my father as a patient for minor problems, I understand. At that time, he'd owned orange and grapefruit groves in Texas and a fishing fleet off New England, if you can imagine that.
Wow. So he was a man with many interests.
Indeed.
And chief among them to make money. This is quite a story that you tell. You mentioned that you feel like he was drummed out of business here because he couldn't raise his rent. You also write about the fact that many of his tenants, including your father, actually wrote to the federal government on his behalf. Tell me more about that.
Well, they thought he was being unreasonably restrained in this, and they appreciated him as a landlord and asked if they could waive the restrictions for him so that they could raise the rents. I never heard of that.
No, tenants writing to the government saying, please allow our landlord to increase our rent.
Yes, indeed.
I think that's a pretty unusual happenstance. So after he couldn't raise the rent, then he did come up with another idea to bring in more money per month, and that was to sell the houses on contract. Tell me about that.
Well, apparently he sold the houses at $55 a month, 6% interest, in 1943-44, toward the end of the war. He had an agent, Mr. Toomey, who had an office downtown on the corner of Washington and Lynn Street, I think, whom my mother would visit once a month with her check to buy the house at. We were living in at 1203 Friendly Avenue.
And that was the second Moffat house that you lived in.
Correct.
And you described the first one for us a little bit. Can you tell us about the second one? What was it like?
Well, it was unique in that it had this round front toward Friendly Avenue that was the living room area. It did have the large fireplace. Had two bedrooms upstairs and a bathroom and a bedroom downstairs as well. Was a very much more modern house than we were in before, in that it was built in 1941, just before World War II began. And my folks bought that in 1946, and we lived there until 1955.
You mentioned that you started writing about your family history for your son. You also took a workshop, a writer's workshop during the summer writing festival here in Iowa City. What made you want to write more about this time in your life, to take it beyond something that you would just give to your family?
Jim McKean, who was professor of English at Mount Mercy University, at the time was the mentor for 13 of us that were taking this course for a week. And we submitted things that we were writing for critique by other members, and we all read each other's submissions and commented. And there seemed to be a lot of interest in the part that I had written about Moffett houses. And that kind of encouraged me to go ahead and try and write more about it.
In revisiting this time in your life, you also write about going to University Elementary School in Iowa City, University High School. These are places, of course, that no longer exist in Iowa City. In visiting,
they broke the mold in 1972.
In revisiting these experiences in this time in your life, what have you learned about your childhood that maybe you hadn't thought about before?
Well, I think some of my best friends were made from age 2 till 18 in this small school setting. And, of course, none of us had any idea what we wanted to do at the time. We were going to grade school and high school. And I have realized how privileged I was to go to school with people who had a commitment to really achieve some remarkable life careers.
You have lived in...
And also, the teachers that I had were just remarkable, particularly John Hafner, who was a wonderful teacher.
You've lived in many other places. You were out of Iowa City for some time. You went to, of course, to college and medical school, and you worked in Chicago for a number of years. What made you want to come back to Iowa City?
Well, I was on the faculty at the University of Chicago, and it seemed at that time that it was not growing, whereas the University of Iowa faculty was growing and recruiting and so forth, and I wanted to be part of that growth. And it was an opportunity for my son to see his grandparents, as my father was retiring. And then I realized, after being away, what a great community Iowa City was and is.
Well, you mentioned that you thought that probably many of your colleagues, this was a part of Iowa City that many of your colleagues that you worked with at the university for many years didn't know about and maybe weren't interested in. What do you want people to know about Iowa City that maybe is overlooked?
Well, it's a wonderful place where the residents care about what happens to this community and the people in the community. And the problems that were solved back then have come up a little, the solutions have come up a little short recently. And I hope people thinking about these problems, affordable housing, passenger rail service, sexual abuse on campus, other things that seemed to have solutions back then may again have better solutions than they have now as a result of thinking about this.
So that sounds bigger than Iowa City. Was there something political that you wanted to say with this book? Because you do actually write quite a bit about politics, about economics as well.
Well, I think Herbert Hoover got a bad rap by a propaganda machine that occurred during a campaign and afterwards. And this person is a great humanitarian, who wasn't a politician to start with, and whose life is being celebrated with an exhibit at the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library that's coming up, opening in a few weeks. And I think people that visit there will see what a fine person this was, unselfish, fed the starving children of Belgium and of Europe after World War I, and Russia, even got commendations from Russia, if you can imagine that, for helping them with starvation and with helping to feed them. Any rate, so I hope that people will think about an alternative point of view than we usually hear every campaign, every presidential campaign season.
You have written a lot over your career. I mean, you were co-author with your father for four editions of De Gouwen's Diagnostic Examination, and then five more editions after your father's death. So you're no stranger to the discipline of writing. How is it different to write a personal story?
Well, that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, was to see if I could write something that wasn't technical. I hoped it was truthful as well. But I guess that it was quite clear what I wanted to write with De Gouwen's Diagnostic Examination, which is a book to tell about how to tell a medical student or a practicing physician how to take a history and do a physical examination and select laboratory tests to come to a diagnosis so a patient can be treated rationally on the basis of the diagnosis and not just symptoms.
So you knew your mission there, and in writing a memoir, the mission is much less clear.
Correct.
I understand that you wrote this, started to write this for your son. It's reaching a broader audience now. What do you hope people will take away from it?
Well, as we've talked about this, I hope they'll think about problems that were solved at the time or partially solved, and how they might be approached today in a little different way than they have been to reach a better settlement than has occurred.
Dr. Richard De Gouwen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity.
Dr. Richard De Gouwen is the author of the new book, House of Moffitt, The First 20 Years, a Memoir. It's been published by Ice Cube Press. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.